It is Thursday, and it's time for a thought leader discussion conversation. Associated Bank is our partner with this. They have some great minds there who've been joining us every Thursday to talk about issues. And this morning is the Senior Vice President of Associated Bank in charge of capital markets, foreign exchange, rate swaps, and commodity derivatives, Donald Lloyd, with us this morning here on the Opening Bell. Don, thanks for being with us this morning. Again, it's great having the Associated Bank with us and all of our thought leaders. These discussions are doing what we hope they did, it would do, and that is to make people think. And, you know, you're an early guy, early riser like I am, and we sort of rattle off a lot of these numbers every morning about foreign markets and foreign numbers. And maybe we could start by talking a little bit about what it is to be an early riser and why those numbers are so important. So welcome.
Well, Steve, thank you. It's good to be part of this group here. Been listening to you for decades. I won't say how many decades it's been, but it's been a long time. I don't want to reveal my age just yet, but excited that Associated Bank is partnering with WGN Radio and Opening Bell. So thank you.
We had you in recently early morning. It's nice to have another early riser in. Kind of saw how things go behind the scenes here.
That's one of the many things you and I have in common, is that we like to get up early. You're more of a four coffee, one donut kind of guy. I'm sort of a four donut, one coffee kind of guy. But we do get up early. And the markets are, especially the foreign exchange markets, they are a 24-hour market. So time sort of just goes out the window, as we go through the Asian time zone into the European time zone and then back around to the North American time zone. So Never have been one to watch. I don't look at a clock very often.
Well, and so that's the transition that I want to make into that and give our listeners a sense of why it's important that we're focusing on that. Because here on the Opening Bell, we have the Associated Bank Market Desk now. We focus very heavily on all of those world markets. They impact what happens here in the United States moment by moment, don't they?
Sure. So let's just take a look at our customer base, typical customer base at Associated Bank. These are mostly clients, corporations, companies that are manufacturing. So they source their goods and services from overseas a lot of times. In fact, you know, studies have shown that of companies coast to coast in the U.S., over 80% will do some sort of international business, whether they're sourcing goods and services from overseas or whether they're selling goods and services overseas. Foreign exchange, just like interest rates, just like oil and gas prices, there's a price risk that's associated with that. And that's where we get involved in it. So when you take a look at the foreign exchange markets, and they are on a 24-hour basis, the way they move around, there is risk that companies or CFOs of companies face 24 hours a day. They're asleep half the time anyway, or at home, not watching the markets, but that risk still exists. Of that 80% that deal foreign exchange or have foreign exchange exposure, 50% do absolutely no hedging whatsoever. They have this exposure that exists, but they do absolutely nothing about it. They either don't know, they either have prioritized it too low, but it's a risk that can be mitigated and it can be closed down if they just take the time to learn a little bit about what hedging is all about. And that's what my job is, and that was my team's job, is to basically take a look at interest rate, commodity derivatives, foreign exchange risks that companies face, educate them if needed, or give them the services and the product, if you will, to help mitigate and reduce those risks that they face.
One of the marching orders and missions of the Opening Bell program is to bring people into the conversation that don't have the kind of experience that you have and know what all of these words are and what they mean and what the financial markets are. So from that standpoint, I don't want to say dumb it down, but let's take it back down a little.
Sure.
What are the big ones when we go through the futures markets and the world markets? What are the big ones that we should be paying attention to and that investors should be listening for?
Sure. When it comes to, we'll just start with the three legs of the stool that we're involved in, the foreign exchange markets. There are 150, 200 different currencies in the world. The majors, if you will, are our major trading partners, whether that's Canada, the European zone, which is the euro, Japan, Mexican peso. Those are the major currencies that a lot of North America companies have exposure to. So we want to focus on those first. A lot of companies that are out there in what are called the emerging markets countries, they get a little less playing time. They're a little bit more volatile when it comes to their price action or their exchange rate action. So we want to sort of pay attention to those as well if you want to bucket these things in like that. But the major ones would be the euro, the Canadian dollar, the Mexican peso, the British pound sterling, the Japanese yen. Those are the major ones that you want to focus on.
So when you first wake up in the morning, what's the first index you look at?
First thing I look at is I check where the spot prices are for those majors. Where's the euro? Where's the pound? Where's the Canadian dollar? What's been the range overnight? Because these exchange rates, just like stock prices, just like the price of gold, they fluctuate. And unlike most commodities that are out there, they're fluctuating quite violently over a 24-hour period. 2 a.m, 2 p.m, it makes no sense just because it's a globally traded type commodity or an exchange. Mm-hmm. So I look at those majors right away. I want to find what the ranges are throughout the day. I want to find out if there have been economic releases in those countries or what was talked about in upcoming economic releases. I want to find out what the drivers are of the market. That pretty much sets the stage for how this big pool of money that's known as this hot money, this investment money, sloshes around the world and will move like an amoeba from one country to another, looking for some return given some amount of risk. And as those parameters change, that money moves. That's the hot money. The manufacturing money is pretty consistent. You know, they're purchasing goods and services. They are selling goods and services overseas. That's all driven by their pricing model. You know, that's just a cost that's built into it. So you're talking to a lot of different people that have a lot of different end purposes when it comes to currency. On the interest rate side, interest rates are nothing more than the cost of money, whether you're a borrower or a lender. So we have to sit there and address those people. And what about the term structure of interest rates, the yield curve, if you will? And then when it comes to the commodity side, oil and natural gas, likewise, like the price of gold, like the price of stocks, there is market risk. These prices move all the time. What we try to do is be the eyes to the market for CFOs and companies that are out there making bicycles or making whatever they're making. They have this risk. They can't spend all of their time looking at that risk. Let us be the eyes to the market.
I try to tell people that as much as they don't want to admit that we are a global society, a global economy, when you say the amoeba, I love that amoeba idea, because I tell people, too, it's like an earthquake. When something bad happens there, you can almost watch the ripples come across the pond to here.
Correct.
How important is it to watch things like that, a political unrest, new breaking news from those countries? How much does that play into your project?
More so now than it was 30 years ago when I started in the market. We are a global market and continue to be globalized more and more every month that goes by. The thing that has really changed the most is the speed at which money can move and the size of the money that can be moved within milliseconds now. So the globe becomes much smaller. Those events that occur outside of our borders, they do have ripple effects, sometimes tsunamis, and you have to be very much aware of what's going on there, because they're going to impact the price of the bicycle you're making or the goods that you're bringing in or your sales of what you're selling overseas. So you do have to be sensitive to it, on top of it, because if you get behind it, it's just a risk that you're not monitoring, that you're not paying attention to.
And on the risk, let's go back to the hedging.
Sure.
That's a frightening figure, 50%. How do you try to get people away from that and guide them to a safer location?
Sure. That's a great question, because that is one of the challenges that we have. The U.S. is very dollar-centric, and historically there's reasons for that. As we came out of World War II, the U.S. was pretty much the only game around globally. So we became the bank of the world. We lent money to the world, and everything was based in U.S. dollars. Fast forward to today, the U.S. is still very dollar-centric. We don't think in terms of exchange rates. We don't think in terms of, you know, what is a dollar versus a Canadian dollar, a dollar versus a euro dollar. If you're in Canada or if you're in Europe, you grew up with that. You know what exchange rates are. You know what exchange rate risk is. So therefore, in the U.S., you deal with companies that will price goods and services overseas in dollars, and they think they have no foreign exchange risk, when in fact they do. So it becomes an education process, and it, like any education process, it's not a 30-second line. It is something you have to sit down, think through, and then remember, and then where to apply it. Okay, so let's learn the concepts, let's learn the terminology, and then let's apply those concepts and terminology. And that's more than a 30-second conversation with a company. So when I interact with companies that this is the first time they've heard it, you do sort of want to talk in pretty simple terms and very simple levels when it comes to their exposure. And you sort of want to see their reactions where they say, yeah, that's the first time someone's explained that to me where I followed it. But you have to take them through it. And you know that as soon as you walk out, they're only going to remember half of it anyway. But it's not what they remember. What you want to leave them with is who told them, so that you become a resource for them, a reference book that sits on their shelf. And they can pick up the phone, they can call you, and they say, you know what, you talked about that hedging or you talked about that currency exposure. Explain that to me again. And that's exactly what we want.
Does that call generally come after they've gotten a note that says, oh, you just lost $50 billion?
You couldn't be more right. Yeah. Usually what happens is I have this exposure. It's in the British pound sterling, and I'm not doing anything about it because we don't have exposure. We're doing everything in dollars. So you have that conversation. Well, someone's handling that exchange rate someplace. All of a sudden, Brexit occurs. And usually what happens then is the CFO is getting called by the owner of the company or the CEO saying, we have these currency losses. What are we doing about it? And that's when our phone board lights up, is usually when there's bad news. And like a doctor, I can stop the bleeding, but I can't put the blood back into your body. So good thing that you sort of, you know, had this epiphany and you became aware that there is currency risk that's there. I can't do anything about the blood that's been spilled. But now let's do some education and stop the bleeding and let's get this risk in control.
Put another way, when Russia had the Winter Olympics recently, I collect Olympic memorabilia.
Sure.
And from the website, the Olympic website, I bought something and it was in something Russian. I didn't understand it. But then when I got the bill, I realized I'd paid $100 for something that was probably $10. It's sort of a simplistic way of describing it. That's sort of what you just said.
Yes. And it's simply because American businessmen and women, on average, do not take the time to focus in on what this currency risk really is. When you deal oil and natural gas, especially the customers that we deal with, those are producers. Those are people that are sticking pipes in the ground and they're pulling oil and natural gas out and they're selling this oil and natural gas to refineries. They are much more aware of the prices of and the risks around oil and natural gas. But foreign currency, you don't. You know, when you pull up to a filling station, you're very much aware of the price of a gallon of gas, and you're very much aware of if the price of oil is going up or down. Currency is sort of this, although it's the largest market in the world, it's this very invisible type market because we don't deal with exchange rates very much. And an exchange rate moves from the euro moves from $1.20 to $1.10. What does that really mean? Well, when you're selling goods and services into the European zone and you see that you're not getting your U.S. dollars from what you're selling coming back to you as much as you were last quarter, it becomes a reality real fast.
So let's talk about Brexit.
Yeah.
Were you surprised, first of all, that that actually happened? And are we giving it as much attention as people who are in the know say we should be worried about giving it?
Was I surprised that it happened?
Yeah.
Yes. I was pretty surprised that the people of the UK were going to walk away from that table, that whole trading block known as the European Union. Was I surprised that they were the Brits that sort of said, gee, we have a car here, let's take it out for a spin and see what happens? But you just got to remember, just because the referendum leans towards or the vote came in as exiting, that doesn't mean the exit is going to happen.
Yeah.
It just means that the people of the UK would prefer, on average, to exit and leave the European Union. Article 50 has to get triggered. Article 50 is the process and the formal process for which the mechanism, the wheel begins to spin to actually leave the European Union. Prime Minister Theresa May basically said that that was going to probably happen between now and March of 2017. So nothing has really started in action yet other than the referendum. So Yes, yeah. It was a surprise that the people of the UK preferred to leave rather than stay. But nothing has really happened yet. We'll see once Article 50 gets triggered.
And my understanding is that regardless of what happens, and this is probably, I think, actually being argued in a court in the UK, the Parliament has to approve it. So they could say, no, we're not going to do this.
Correct.
Yeah.
But unlike the United States, the politicians over in the UK tend to do the will of their constituents. You know, they do represent, they are civil servants that represent what the people want. So I would be surprised, since the majority of people do want to leave the European Union, I'll be surprised if this gets halted in any way, shape, or form. But so we'll see.
What's the impact going to be globally? Because I've heard everything from Armageddon to bumps.
Yeah, and, you know, your guess is as good as mine on that. What do I think will happen? I think the stronger countries of the European Union are lining up to see what happens. And once one goes, I would suspect there will be other countries that will begin this process as well. And I don't think it's going to be the demise of the European Union. What I really think, as I look forward, is to see a two-tier European Union exist. One with those countries that are fiscally responsible, that their economies are strong, and then those countries as a trading bloc that are much weaker. And I think you're going to get a two-tier European Union that comes out of this.
Let's talk about derivatives.
Sure.
First of all, tell us what a derivative is.
Yeah. It's one of those great cocktail party words that you like to drop when you want to sound important and throw everybody off track. Derivative is nothing. It's anything whose price is derived from an underlying. That's all and technically it is. Something whose price is derived from some underlying. So, for example, if you take a look at an option, okay, a gold option or oil, options on oils, that option instrument derives its price from the underlying. The underlying in oil would be a barrel of oil. In currency, you have the same thing, a derivative, an option, a forward hedge. And all a forward hedge is, what price would I lock in today to be used at some point in the future? Okay, so whatever that future price is, it is deriving its price from an underlying. And that's all a derivative really is anything that derives its price from something else that's derived from an underlying. So there's nothing magical about it. It could be applied anywhere. But in the simplest terms, that's all it is.
Yeah, but you have to have a little bit of experience, too. And this is where you come in and Associated Bank comes in. If you don't have the experience and the know-how and the knowledge of the intricacies of this, it could be, as we mentioned earlier, expensive.
Yes, it's a language. And look at it like a foreign language. And because my team speaks foreign exchange and interest rate swaps and oil and natural gas derivatives, or that, those are three different languages, if you will. And we're talking to customers that have exposure that have just never really learned that language. So our job is to teach them a foreign language. And like any foreign language, a derivative, when you first hear it, you'll say, how will I ever do it? How will I ever master it? I'll never learn this stuff. Then you start to read about it and you learn about it and you get this head knowledge, what I call a head knowledge of it, where you can talk to yourself in your head and sort of work your way through what the derivative is. But you're afraid to speak it. Just like a foreign language, you might be able to read Spanish or read German, but you're afraid to speak it to somebody who knows it. And that's where you want to get your customer to, where they're comfortable speaking that language back and forth to you. But that takes time, it takes a lot of trust, and it takes a lot of self-confidence and determination on your customer standpoint.
We talked a little bit about the danger of that and also the speed of which things travel. Mm-hmm. Do those things travel too fast? Is the money moving too fast? Are the numbers moving too fast? Are there enough safety precautions in place to stop a problem before it hits?
That's a good question. No, I don't think technology is to a point where things are moving too fast. I'm not sure what that means. You know, if I need to mitigate my risk, I want to mitigate that risk now, immediately. I think the challenge when moving too fast comes in will be the automated models that are out there that are pushing through buy and sell orders automatically from some algorithm or some model that sits out there. So, for instance, Brexit, for example. The referendum vote came out. The British pound sterling weakened significantly against the U.S. dollar, against the euro, against everything else. That happened very quickly. But there was a reason behind that. There was another event that happened soon after that, and it was a combination of there was a comment by the president of France who came out and said the UK should be punished, should be penalized, should be fined, and that created a huge move in a very short period of time in the British pound sterling. The other excuse that came in of what caused that move at that particular time was what they call fat fingers, somebody sitting there accidentally typing something in. And that happens because I've seen it happen before. But the other part of that is these algorithmic trading models that are out there, that somehow they start to feed on each other and a cell becomes multiple cells, becomes a magnitude of cells, and you have these violent market reactions and these violent moves. That's where I think there's concern. It's not so much the speed at which money's moved or the speed at which information flows. It's sometimes these models that just trigger these buys and sells that come out for huge size that have absolutely no human intervention whatsoever in them. And then somebody says, oops, that's a mistake. And all of a sudden, the ripple effect, as you mentioned earlier, that echo goes out across the world. What happened? But at the end of the day, it's real dollars and cents. It's real economic disaster or benefit to companies and individuals that are out around the world.
Every once in a while, listeners will probably hear us say the markets have put the brakes on or there's some sort of thing that has kicked in. Those things exist. Should there be more of those?
In the right situations, yes. When it comes to, as you can tell, I'm not a big fan of model trading or algorithmic trading. Around that, yes, I think there should be, because I do think there should be some type of human decision involved in what's going on. These markets exist pure and simply to facilitate international trade, to facilitate business. Your derivatives, that's why they exist. A company in one country selling something in another, a company pulling oil or natural gas out of the ground, a country borrowing money in an adjustable rate or a variable rate interest rate. Okay, these are legitimate expenses that need to be hedged. Somebody woke up one day a long time ago and said, gee whiz, we don't need that natural business underneath. We can use these same products and we can speculate. We don't need the natural buyers and sellers underneath it. Let's just take a view and let's speculate. That's what regulators want to sit there and close down or really control. That's what the politicians want to control. And I think it's a legitimate point. I really do. We have forgotten what these markets are designed to do. They are there to facilitate and reduce trade, reduce risks for companies that are out there that have a legitimate underlying concern there.
There's a huge danger. We saw recently this DDoS attack. Cyber attacking has been in the news a lot lately. And I've heard more than one person, expert, say the markets are extremely vulnerable to this, that we could, in some words, be brought to our knees. Our economies could be brought to our knees with the right person getting in and doing the right thing. Yep. Is that a fair way to describe that, or should we be that worried?
Now you're talking my conspiracy side of me. Yep. Yes, I think wars now are economic wars.
Yeah.
And I think that is a legitimate concern. And I think that the people that have vested interest and responsibilities for closing that and monitoring that are there. And I think they're doing an incredible job doing it. But yeah, I think there are economic wars and economic ripples that are being caused out there for not good purposes. And yes, I they are out there.
Well, Don, if people are listening, it's comforting to know that they're in safe hands if they come to you. You've got a handle on this. We appreciate your insight and expertise, and thanks for joining our conversation this
morning. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
And Donald Deloitte, Senior Vice President, Associated Bank, Foreign Exchange, Rate Swaps, Commodity Derivatives. He is the Manager of Capital Markets at Associated Bank. You can, by the way, follow along Associated Bank on Twitter. Their Twitter handle is at Associated Biz is where you want to go. And we will have more of our conversation with Don Lloyd after the bell. Online, you'll be able to find it soon at WGNRadio.com, along with all of our other thought leader conversations.